Yeah. Okay, welcome back. This is public inspection of case files. And I want to introduce you to Julian Grant. He's our speaker this afternoon, and he is currently the section leader of municipal affairs for the Attorney General's Office. He did his undergraduate work at Harvard and went to law school at UT. Previously, he served as the deputy attorney for the city of Temple. He was also a briefing attorney for the Third Court of Appeals in Austin and worked as a hearing judge for the Texas Workforce Commission. So help me welcome Julian Grant.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay. Well, this is my last time giving this year, and I've learned a few things. This is not the most exciting material. That's been, I'm sorry, there's not a lot I can do about that, but it is important that we go over this. I just want to first introduce how I normally interact with judges and clerks. I'm frequently the number that the center gives for backup when they're at these conferences, so you may talk to me there. Frequently, we also get some, for you judges at least, some dual office holding questions. That seems to be the number one thing where I talk to judges, and there's an excellent presentation on this that you can get from TMC. You just call me and I'll email it to you as well on what the offices you can hold other than that. But of course, that has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about today. We are going to talk about what's important to you. This is called Public Inspection of Case Files. We start out with the Public Information Act. And I've also gotten a lot of comments over the year that, that's interesting, but as you'll find out, the Public Information Act doesn't apply to you at all. So it's not all that relevant except for an analogy. And I want to stress that out. What we're doing is really making an analogy from what is applicable to the rest of the city as opposed to what's applicable to you. And there's a lot of similarities, as you'll notice. There are some differences, though, and I'll try to point those out. But we start out with the basics of what we're going to learn here today. So first of all, you ask that question. This is, of course, a request from a member of the public for a document or anything that would be classified as some information. And that's something that we'll talk about a little bit. But you identify whether or not this request is going to be under the Public Information Act or under Rule 12, a judicial rule, the Supreme Court, or what we call the common law right of inspection and access. That is something that has been made up basically by case law. There's a United States Supreme Court case we'll look at that is the clearest definition of what the courts over the years, going back really to the British courts, have allowed when citizens request information from their courts. So we will discuss very briefly the Public Information Act, then move on to what you'll be more interested in, Rule 12. We'll see what judicial records means. It's a very misleading definition, but that's what we're stuck with. And then we'll discuss the common law rights and just briefly talk about some of the costs that you can charge for these. This is, I don't know if you can see this, but this is a large portly gentleman being asked for a document, and it's a fire on his desk, and he says, "I'm quite certain I'm not going to be able to produce that document." Now, that would actually be a misdemeanor, so let's hope that's not the case. But frequently, when you get some of these requests, some of these large requests, that may be exactly what goes through your mind. It'd be so much easier. This is a real deceptively simple. It looks simple, but I have learned that it's hard to get a grip on this. But it goes back to these two basic questions. You look at the request, and this will be a request in writing, just to foreshadow that. And you look at who is the request addressed to? Who is it saying it wants the information? And that's a big deal. And what information is wanted? That will be the next question you go to. And from those two questions, you're going to decide whether or not the Public Information Act, the Judicial Rule 12, or the common law right of access is going to apply. So we start out with this written request to the Sleepy Hollow Municipal Court from Mr. Speed Racer. He states that under the Texas Public Information Act, I would like all of the information in all of my speeding cases. I'm going to use this just to kind of point out that the Texas Public Information Act is named in here. It's interesting, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Just because a requester uses a particular thing for, we get this all the time, the Freedom of Information Act, that's referenced. Of course, that's a federal law. That has nothing to do with any thing that a city or the state of Texas or a court would produce, but the newspapers, for example, will always use that. So you'll hear Freedom of Information or Open Records or the Public Information Act. All of that really just means that it's a request for documents, and you have to determine whether or not it applies or not. So looking carefully at this, we ask who is the request addressed to the municipal court. So we'll ask, does the Public Information Act or some other rule apply? And we're going to look at the information, which is the information inside the speeding cases. So those are going to be actually adjudicated or ongoing cases in your court. And is Rule 12 or the common law right going to apply in that case? Okay, so like I said, we're going to real briefly talk about the Public Information Act to give an analogy and to kind of show what it would cover. It covers, for the most part, any kind of information, not just documents, but any kind of information in electronic form that it actually exists in that you're not manipulating to, for example, you know, to create a spreadsheet that is not there. You don't have to do that, but it is a document. And one analogy on this slide that I would make is, you know, the Public Information Act applies to a governmental body or something that it has the right of access to. I think that might apply in a court's case. For example, if you had some kind of contract with a supplier or with your computer company, and you had maybe some plans, again, that's going to be something that's going to fall outside the Public Information Act, but if you've got a contractual right to that information, you've got to treat it as your own, and you'll have to either get the information or deny it, as it may be. Okay, but the important part really about the Public Information Act is that it doesn't include judiciary, which includes municipal courts. So we talked about that letter was addressed to the municipal court. That's important because if it had been addressed to the police department or the city attorney slash law department, then the Public Information Act would apply, even if it's something that you might have in your files as well. I mean, so if it's mistakenly sent over to you, maybe by the rest of the city, or if the requester gives it to you, but it clearly states it's another agency with the city, then the PIA is going to apply. That stuff may not be releasable under the PIA. City attorney is going to have to do that work, but if it's addressed to the city attorney or the police department, and like I said, it's in their records, it also happens to be in yours, maybe that's a problem, maybe that's a records problem, but that's when the PIA will apply. But it won't apply, like I said, if it is addressed to the municipal court. Okay. And this is going to, again, be analogous to what we'll talk about under the Rule 12 and the common law right. What kind of request would trigger a request for documents in general? Do you have to answer a verbal request or a written request, or are both accurate? Have you ever had a verbal request that you've responded to? The logic of this is that you do not have to respond to a verbal request. It's got to be in writing. Again, something that's analogous, there aren't any rules that I'm aware of, but this is something you could do. Now, any written request to the court is going to trigger one of the rules that we'll talk about. Also, I believe you could probably designate someone to receive emails and faxes. So you could designate your court clerk or perhaps an assistant to do that. And you could have a sign out basically giving that information. Again, there's no rule that says that, but I believe the analogy, you could do that. But basically, this states it's got to be in writing, and it can be in any form. It can be on the back of an envelope. In other words, you could create a form and say you've got to fill this out, but that wouldn't suffice. They could hand you anything in writing requesting something, and you would have to treat it as a valid request. And again, these rules are going to apply to other court records that we'll talk about, in that you can't ask the requester, you know, why do you want it, what's your purpose? But you can ask questions if it's a very broad request or if it's a confusing request. You can ask questions as to clarify what exactly it is they want. And again, this isn't the deadline that's going to apply, but basically it is that there is a deadline you've got to respond by. That's 10 business days. That'll be 14 days for what we'll talk about. But you've got to actually do something. Now, again, this the request from the AG, that's not going to be something you're going to do under Rule 12. So, again, I'm showing you these rules, and they don't apply to you, but that shows you that there is another avenue for it. And some of these rules apply, some of them don't. Okay, and I'm going to skip all this because it doesn't apply. So, the request to the municipal court. So, does the Public Information Act apply? What do we think on this? Does anyone think that it's going to apply? No, you're all correct. We're going to move on to the next question then. Does Rule 12 apply? Now, Rule 12 was in response to a series of, it's actually an AG opinion that ruled that the Texas Supreme Court phone records were open to the public. The Supreme Court then immediately, the same day, passed a directive saying, no, they're not. But since they're the Supreme Court, that has stuck, obviously. But in response to that, they realized the need for some kind of rule analogous to the Public Information Act, or what was then the Open Records Act. So they passed Rule 12, and it's got a lot of similarities. And that's why we do this little presentation showing you first the Public Information Act and then Rule 12, because they are real similar on what they do. And again, judicial records, this is a misleading, you know, I don't know how to say it. It's just not a very good thing, because it says records made or maintained by the court in its regular course of business, but not pertaining to its adjudicative function. So you've got judicial records that don't have anything to do with your adjudicative function. So anything related to a case is not a judicial record. That is so confusing, and I'm sorry, but that's the way the Rule 12 defines it. So judicial record is Rule 12, but it's not really judicial. It's really administrative. Okay, so we're going to start here to shock you maybe, or not to shock you, with some of these things that, now again, remember what I just said, it's a difficult term to get your hand to. So who of you think that traffic tickets are judicial records? You raise your hand if you think that a traffic ticket is a judicial record. I think I'm doing my point, because I've had a lot of people raise their hand, and I'm hammering it home that a judicial record actually isn't judicial. And, of course, a traffic ticket has to deal with a case. And so you're correct. It's not going to be under Rule 12. It's not a judicial record. What about an arrest or a search warrant? Is that going to be under Rule 12? Is that going to be a judicial record? It's not. Very good. It's not going to be. Now, what about your telephone logs? What does that sound like? Yes, it's a administrative. I mean, use that term, I guess. Maybe I should use that term, but it's not what they use. An administrative record. It is under Rule 12. The docket sheet. It's not. Again, it's going to fall under where we're going to see the common law right, because those docket sheets, as long as they're filled out having to do with a particular case, are going to be common law right. They're not a judicial record because they're not, quote, administrative. Now, your personnel file, that's the one that usually gets a rise. Is that going to fall under Rule 12? It is going to fall under Rule 12. However, as you'll learn, you don't have to release it. And, you know, to be honest, for the first time today, I really thought about that when I was going over this presentation. That's a big difference from the Public Information Act, because most public employees, their file is pretty wide open, except for some medical, and their home phone number if they make that request. Most of that is releasable, but under here, Rule 12 has basically made that personnel file an exception, and we'll go over the fact that it is under Rule 12, but it is an exception. And then finally, deferred adjudication sheets. This is a tricky one. Does this fall under Rule 12? It can. It can if it's by this, it means it's your court form. So if it's not filled out, so if it's a sheet that you have and someone wants a copy of it, that's going to fall under Rule 12 as an administrative. But if it's filled out with pertinent information about a case, it's going to fall under the case law. So it's not going to be under Rule 12. So again, some of these can have a couple answers, like the docket sheet and the deferred adjudication sheet. Any form you use for the court, you can release. And normally, I mean, you would think you would release that under a Rule 12 request, but if it has information about a defendant's case, then it's going to be a different standard. Okay, who is responsible? And since we have a mixed audience here, this is great. Who is responsible for the Rule 12 request? Is it the clerk or is it the judge? How many thinks it's the clerk? Maybe I should say, how many clerks thinks it's the clerks? How many judges think it's the judges? So we're a little bit hesitant, or we don't like to raise our hand, like me. But it's going to be the judge. So even if it's addressed to the court, or even if it's addressed to the court clerk, you court clerks, please, in a sense I'm saying you don't have to worry about this, except you have to know who to get it to. Now, that's not entirely true, because hopefully you work with your judge and you figure out what rule or what exception might apply. But it is ultimately the judge's determination. And for those of you in larger courts, it's going to be the presiding judge. So that's going to be the, quote, record custodian under this rule, 12.2E. So if you're an associate judge, again, I'm telling you who to pass it on to, pass it up the chain. But again, this is something I'm sure you'll work with your court on. There's a very similar set of rules as we went over the Public Information Act that you have to have the request in writing, so a verbal request. But again, despite what they have in it, whoever's name is on there, if they have the wrong address or whatever, and it's handed to you, I mean, you can't use those to deny it. You've got to go through these procedures. But again, they've got to identify what kind of records, so you can ask those questions. And there isn't necessarily any rule requiring you to do it in writing, but I would suggest that, because, in the Public Information Act, you've got to prove that you did everything. And there will be someone who, as you'll see, who the requester can appeal to. So you may want to get in the habit of documenting when you made the request for clarification, what you said, and putting that in writing. But I don't know what the common practice is, honestly, because, again, there aren't any rules that really spell this out for the courts. And the request has to be handed on to the record custodian. That's going to be the presiding municipal judge or the single municipal judge. And you've got to answer this as soon as possible. That's just like the Public Information Act. And you don't have any longer than 14 days. The Public Information Act is 10 business days, which can actually fall. That little calendar shows that it can be about 3 weeks overall. So you may have shorter time to answer a Rule 12. And very similar to the Public Information Act, you can ask what it's about. I mean, you can, I guess, ask for the ID to make sure. Make sure that the person that's on there, I'm not exactly sure what the purpose of that rule is, but it's there. And then importantly, you've got to treat all requests uniformly. So just because the requester is a defendant, I mean, that would frequently be who it would be the requester. So you can't just use that against them, and you can't use it against it if they, quote, try to drown you in a, that happens. And more likely, it may be, from some of these companies that drown you with a request. I'm sure that's happened to some of you at least. And you can't just ignore, well, you put it in the back of the pile because it's those, you know, blankety company from Houston again. And you can't do that. You've got to, again, put it in the right order if it's received and deal with it. So when can you deny access under Rule 12? There are exemptions, and we'll go over them just in a minute. So if it's on the list of exemptions, like your personnel file was, then you can deny it. You can also decide if it's not under that, then you've got to, if you want to deny it, make this finding. And this is going to be a finding you're going to have to make in writing, and it's got to make some real determination, not just, I don't want it to happen, but give some reasons why the request, complying with the request, would substantially unreasonably impede the operation of your court. And there aren't any decisions on this. The comment to Rule 12 says, gives a real, I guess, an obvious example. If they requested all the records from your court from all time, then that would be an example of something that would probably impede your court. Well, something less than that, that there's a lot of discretion, but if it's something that could be complied with in a few hours, you're probably not going to want to use this. If it's going to shut down your court for weeks and weeks, if it's the kind of request, if you're a large court, and it really is for a vast number of your records, rather than deny it, though, you probably just want to work out a schedule of releasing it that's going to be practicable. And you probably want to, again, there's no rule, but like under the PIA, you want to give them something in writing stating, okay, this is a large request. I can't do it in 14 days, but I can do it in, a month. Can we work that out? And hopefully they'll agree to it. And if not, maybe you can make this finding that you just can't do it in that time period. And you've got to notify them in writing within 14 days. These are the exceptions that I talked about. Again, anything dealing with the personnel file or sensitive information about the employees, your calendar is an important exception. Anything dealing with something you've written down about the way your court works, if you consider that your judicial work product. But again, not something really administrative. This is something dealing with the way that you decide cases. And again, that notice of a denial has to contain the right of appeal, and that's spelled out in Rule 12.9. You have a copy of the rules in your materials, and all that information is contained there. And again, that's going to be the denial either for the reason of the exemptions that are in 12.5 or for that nebulous, it's disrupting my court type of thing. And so we've come to this request under the Texas Public Information Act. Speed Racer wants the information in his speeding cases. So is Rule 12 going to apply here? We're ready to ask that question. And I see some shakings of heads, and that's correct. We're going to have to go on to the common law right. Before we do that, I'm at the kind of the halfway point, and we've covered PIA and Rule 12. Are there any questions so far? Any questions about what Rule 12 means, how you go about it? It's as you'll see, it's more well-defined than the common law right, but it's not quite as well-defined as the Public Information Act. And it has to deal with administrative records, even though they're called judicial records. And so we're going to move on to some less clear ground. The common law right of inspection and access was summarized and really determined by this case by the United States Supreme Court dealing with, this is kind of a big case, dealing with the tape recordings from the Nixon's office and the Watergate scandal. There had been the criminal trials of the defendants, and interestingly enough, the judge in that case was very lenient on letting the public listen to the tapes during the trial. So he let the press and those who were attending the trial listen to the tapes during the trial. But then after the cases were final and the appeals were final, Warner Communications asked the court for additional copies. And the court at that point said, no, you know, this has been out there. There was a chance for the public to do it, but this is a circus, and so I'm denying that motion. So it went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I wanted to go through this because it gives some language that isn't all that helpful, but is all we really have to go on, because you'll find there really aren't any Texas cases on this either. This is the one case that defines the common law right as well as it can. And the court's saying, it's clear to us that the courts of this country recognize a general right to inspect and copy public records and documents, including judicial records and documents. In contrast to the English practice, American decisions generally do not condition enforcement of this right on a proprietary interest in the document or upon a need for it as evidence in a lawsuit. So what the court's saying is we have a tradition of openness. Of course, in Texas, we even have a constitutional amendment of open courts. So, you know, a Texas decision on this could be even broader, in my opinion. The interest necessary to support the issuance of a writ compelling access to the information has been found in a citizen's desire to keep a watchful eye on the workings of public agencies, so a watchdog, and it cites some old, really old cases, and then it says, also in a newspaper publisher's intention to publish information concerning the operation of government. I'm thinking here, I don't know if you've read this, but in the news there's been, in England, there's been a huge scandal about the members of parliament and their expense accounts, which reminds me a lot of city council squabblings that have gone over the year of some of the cities that have gone in. But and that's the kind of thing a newspaper published that and had a right of access to that information. So either a citizen or a newspaper, again, in our country especially, has a long history of having access to it. However, it says it's uncontested that the right to inspect and copy judicial records is not absolute. Every court has supervisory power over its own records and files, and access has been denied when court files have become or might become a vehicle for improper purposes. For example, the common law right of inspection has bowed before the power of a court to ensure that its records are not used to gratify private spite or promote public scandal through the publication of the painful and sometimes disgusting details of a divorce case. Now, you won't have a divorce case, but I suppose there could be some kind of high-profile case in your court where you might be able to apply this. Not often are you going to be able to deny documents under the common law right, but these give some examples of where the Supreme Court has indicated that's possible. Also, courts have refused to permit their files to serve as reservoirs of libelous statements for press consumption. So I think what they might be saying here, the public had a right to view it, and the press is just kind of pouring salt into the wound because it's really been out there. It's been in all the papers. They just want it so they can play it on the 7 o'clock news. And in this case, the Supreme Court said that we're not going to allow that. And it says also it's a source of business information that might harm a litigant's competitive standing. Again, that probably won't come out in municipal court, but that's another possibility. It's really difficult for us to distill from the relatively few judicial decisions a comprehensive definition of what is referred to as the common law right of access. The few cases that have recognized such a right do agree the decision as to access is one best left to the sound discretion of the court, discretion to be exercised in light of the relevant facts and circumstances. So that's really what this slide is all. It's got all those words in there. It is at your discretion, but you'll have to realize that a denial of access in a particular case is got to be very well grounded. And while there isn't a right of appeal like there is in Rule 12, certainly it's subject to mandamus in a higher court. So it is reviewable, and it certainly would be reviewable. So our question about, again, with the wrong title of the Texas Public Information Act, we ignore that. We know that doesn't apply. The information in all speed racer speeding cases. So does the common law right apply to that request? Or is it Rule 12? Is this having to deal with particular cases? It is. It's got to be with the speeding cases. So you've got to use that broad answer. And there, you notice there isn't an answer. I mean, normally you would have to release that information. but there may be an exceptional case where you state, I'm not going to do that. And then finally, before we get to some scenarios at the end, you might want to know how much you can charge. Yes. Yeah, the question is, and I'm going to repeat it since we're being recorded and so y'all can hear. The question is, what if a request is made for, say, case information that's properly a common law right scenario, but the request says under Rule 12, I'd like this. First of all, it's going to be fairly uncommon when someone even knows there is a Rule 12. I've found a number of court clerks, again, no one in this room, but that don't know that the Rule 12 existed. So for a citizen to say Rule 12 would be highly unusual. But say they did, you would treat it the same as the public information. You just grit your teeth and analyze it under the proper one. So you would just ignore the fact that they got the wrong thing, and you would use your common law right and probably release the information, unless there was an exceptional case. For all of these, let's ignore the Public Information Act, but a Rule 12, the cost, there is no statute. It says provided by statute, but that hasn't been passed yet. So it's the actual cost prescribed by the AG. And that's strange because, again, there's no role the AG has under Rule 12. We're under the PIA, but we have taken over the kind of the entity that promulgates the cost rules, and that's in the Texas Administrative Code. And again, that's Rule 12.7 in the Texas Administrative Code. So, you know, that's I couldn't quote it offhand everything in there, but we'll show you some of that. And then for the common law right, I would encourage you to go ahead and try to get a municipal ordinance passed for that, because again, you've got to go under the rules, and you can't do that for Rule 12. But for the common law right, you could have the council pass an ordinance stating, and I suppose it could be a lot higher, not so high it would. Deter that common law right, but you could do that. But what the administrative code does allow is basically 10 cents a page, personnel cost, and overhead cost are allowed, but only if it's going to be a voluminous request, more than 50 pages. So you can charge $15 an hour for personnel and an overhead of 20% of personnel cost and any kind of postage. So the request from Speed Racer, 15 speeding cases, they're going to be 10 pages of documents. So you get $15 for that at 10 cents a page. Since it's over 50 pages, you can charge your personnel and overhead cost. You can see it's not a huge amount of money, but it's going to end up costing close to $50 for that kind of request of 150 pages. And again, for the common law right, you could make this a little higher if you wanted to, I think. Okay, so at the end, we're going to go through some scenarios. Racer X, who happens to be Speed Racer's long-lost brother, I believe, has given up the racing life, has become a defense lawyer. How exciting! As compared to a racer, but puts in this request for all this information, docket sheets. So is that going to fall under docket sheets for the next 2 weeks? So again, is that going to be the common law or the Rule 12? It's going to be the common law, right? All of the Speed Racer speeding cases, we really did that already, but that's going to be the common law, right? The personnel file, is that going to be under Rule 12? It is going to fall under Rule 12. It's going to be an administrative thing. But again, 12.5 is the exception, so you do not have to release it. So you just basically give them something in writing stating, "There, I find that there is an exception under Rule 12. You don't have to make that finding. You just say, there's an exemption under 12.5, so I'm denying your right, and do that within 14 days. And then the last one, all of the complaints filed on that particular day. That may be one that you get sometimes. And the answer is, it's going to be the common law right of access, and for the most part, you're going to have to answer it in some reasonable time period. And then finally, Sparky, Speed's best friend, is a reporter. And so he puts in a request to the PD and the municipal court. Puts in the same request to both and requests the following. And we're really just interested, you know, if it's going to go to the police department, this is just pointing out again that if it goes to the police department and they happen to have the information about some of your cases, then they're going to have to respond under the Public Information Act. They're going to have to send a brief to us explaining, well, they're either going to have to release it or they're going to have to send a brief to us explaining why the law enforcement exception in this case applies and they don't have to release it. And, of course, that can be appealed. So even if you happen to have that information, if it's addressed to the police department and it's some what you might consider a court information, they're going to be the ones responsible. What that means is that you need to get with your PD and with your city attorney or prosecutor and make sure you don't have multiple copies of stuff that maybe should be with them or should be with you. I know that does happen. But if the request comes to the court for a search warrant, is that going to be releasable? It is going to be releasable. And there's some statutes on that. It's the Code of Criminal Procedure 18.01 is where you'll find it. The arrest warrant, I'll just give it away, that's got to be released as well, and that's under 15.26 of the Code of Criminal Procedure. So search warrants and arrest warrants have been made releasable by the legislature. And in fact, there's some penalties for not releasing them, even some criminal penalties that have been added on. All the traffic tickets issued on a particular date, is that going to be Rule 12 or the common law right? Is it going to be the common law right? Does everyone think so? Yes, it is. Again, these are cases. Even though they're multiple cases, you've got to deal with it as a request for a case. And then the court's calendar. Is that going to be under Rule 12? Yes, it is. Again, not releasable, though, under an exemption. So you state in writing, it's under Rule 12. There's an exception here, and I'm not going to release it and give that within 14 days. We're coming to the end. We've gone pretty fast today. I've cut some of the time by not going under the Public Information Act as much, I think, as we have, and so hopefully haven't confused. And I've got to say that, at least in my determination, y'all have gotten it more than any audience yet this year. Maybe at the end of the year we're finally getting it across. And I'm sorry again for the boring nature of this talk, but it is important because you're going to have a lot of requests. And I think the reason why this was put on here is because of the press. I mean, the press knows and is so into information of all types getting out, and they know this stuff pretty well, so you need to know it well. You need to know that any request in writing has got to be treated seriously, even if they're factual errors, even if it says the Freedom of Information Act or the Open Records Act. So if they make these goofy mistakes, you can't just throw it away. You've got to treat it as a serious request and deal with it under one of these things. There is, there's no way you could see this, and we didn't put it in a PowerPoint, but there's a nifty flowchart of all this stuff, really non-judicial and judicial records. That's on the TMCEC website, and I understand some courts are blowing this up and putting it up for their staff to follow, and that's a great thing. I would say the only thing on here that maybe has changed since they did that is having to deal with Social Security numbers. You can now redact those, and the statute really doesn't say that it doesn't apply to the court, so I would say that you can redact the Social Security numbers without having to worry about it. It says on here that it's got to be a particular type of, that it was required by the federal government, but I think the legislature overturned our open records ruling rather quickly after we said that the county clerks were going to have to go back and redact all the information to the beginning of time. They changed the statute, but they clarified that Social Security numbers can be redacted. I would add to that, driver's licenses are confidential under the transportation code, I believe, and VIN numbers. So those kind of things can be redacted without really thinking about it. But with that caveat, this chart's pretty good on on what kind of questions to think about. And do you have any questions of me or any comments that you want to make about what a bad job I did or what a good job I did? Again, feel free to yes, I got one. Oh, yes, and I forgot the last. I'm sorry about that. Got so carried away. This again, these are the resources that's in your materials, but forget the PIA, I guess. But as far as the cost questions, again, the statute makes that applicable. So actually, that is a person you can call with cost questions. Hadassah Schloss is her name, and her number is there, and that's in your materials. And any of you as official city employees or officials can call me at that number, and we have, again, this is really the stuff about Rule 12 that you'd be interested in. There are decisions on the web about that, and we've kind of distilled the best of them here. There's not a whole bunch else out there, but you could certainly check back as things go and see if there's been any clarification. But yeah, feel free to call either myself or Hadassah with a cost question. And again, for any other municipal court related matter too, we're certainly here to serve. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap up and say that it's been enjoyable coming to Odessa to see everyone. Thank you.